So jitta means it's a word used quite commonly or centrally in the Thai forest tradition, meaning something like original mind. Sometimes they translate it as a primordial mind and so on. And often the translators into English see fit to give it capital letters to kind of signify its particular doctrinal centrality, which is part of the process whereby the Western disciples take teachings and reify them and turn them into philosophical postulates. But jit-dharm, what does it actually mean? It's very difficult to work out. Original mind, well, you know, the Thai teachers are not known for their kind of theoretical consistency. And I don't think that they even vaguely strive for such a thing, or perhaps would even understand what it means. They'd probably be more dismissive of it if you started to talk about it. From my experience, I seem to have heard different ajahns using the word in very different ways. Some people seem to mean, like Mumbu Ted, I think I remember one of his talks where he's talking about jit-dharm, and he clearly meant it as a state of samadhi. Say there's one particular talk of Lumpur Chah's where he just equates jit-dharm with cessation. He says, like, the original mind, well, it's original, it's like the cup, you move the cup and the original spot the cup was in, you have to give it a name, but there's no cup there, so the original mind is just cessation, but you have to call it something. You can't just sit there and grunt at each other. So there's something like that, whereas some teachers like Lungda Bua and many monks who follow his tradition, it seems to mean something like a kind of cosmic consciousness which is equated with Nibbana, some kind of ground of being kind of thing, which seems very similar to Hindu Upanishads or something like that. And I mean, it's fairly obvious that you can't find any such doctrine like that in the Buddhist scriptures and in the suttas, despite the very earnest and vigorous attempts by certain scholars to find one. It's more convincing. What's really convincing is that if you look in the Upanishads, that kind of doctrine is taught very clearly, very straightforwardly, very explicitly, and you know that's what they're teaching. Everybody agrees. The Upanishads teach that kind of thing. The infinite consciousness is the ultimate Brahman, and that's the goal of spiritual practice. And if the Buddha meant that, why didn't he just say it? And you can't sort of wriggle out of this by you know, shifting a few words or kind of evoking the metaphors that's being used or whatever. So why? What's going on here? What are the Thai forest ajahns talking about? The most obvious interpretation would be that they're talking about a kind of samadhi experience, which is being understood as nibbana or enlightenment experience. There are a few passages in the suttas, which are discussed most famously in Nyanananda's Concept and Reality, which refer to what seems to be some kind of state of samadhi which is peculiar to or can be accessed by an arahant. And that's an actual state of consciousness. It is an actual kind of awareness which is associated with enlightenment. It's described in different ways. Bhava nirodho nibbanam, bhava nirodho nibbanam. Nibbana is the ending of existence. Nibbana is the ending of existence. So this is what you take as your object. It's a difficult thing to try to quantify, and perhaps this, something like this might be what these teachers are pointing to, sort of a meditative experience attained in this lifetime by enlightened masters, which is in somehow related to the ending of their defilements. That's one possible interpretation. I think that you know, you tend to find that Western students will reify these things very, very greatly. And the problem really is that they're taught by a particular teacher within a particular context, and really there's no discussion about it. There's no possibility of discussing it meaningfully with the teacher. All you can really do, if you like that teacher's teaching, you want to practice it, you can go there and practice it, realize the jit-dharm, and then say to them, is this what you mean by jit-dharm? Then you can maybe figure out the answer. But trying to figure it out through discussion and dialogue, I'm not sure how successful that would be. One thing which I wonder, And I think that especially in the Thai forest tradition, it's got a very, very strong, it's constructed a very strong ideology of experience. Everything is based on experience. I'm just speaking from my experience, blah, blah, blah. But experience, but you know, what you're saying is not your experience. What you're saying is words. You're communicating in a language with a terminology, and that's not based on your experience. That's based on your cultural conditioning. And our the way we describe and relate to our meditation experience is conditioned by our culture, and that's why the Christians go off and meditate and they see Jesus, and the Sufis go off and meditate and they see Allah or whatever it might be. Thai forest monks go and meditate, you know, Burmese forest monks go and meditate, they see Kalapas. Thai forest monks meditate, they see Jit Durm. Why do they see Jit Durm? Well, I think that that's actually conditioned culturally. And I think if we were to look, perhaps there are sources, perhaps there are not, but it sounds very similar to Yogacara teachings and such doctrines like the Jit Durm. Perhaps we might want to trace it back to the north of Thailand and an influence from the southern areas of China where the Yogacara, the Chan schools which descended from Yogacara were found. Or, alternatively, it might be related to the fact that the whole of Thailand was essentially Mahayana country for many centuries before it became Theravada. And so perhaps these things have persisted through the oral culture. They certainly haven't emerged out of the Pali texts. And personally, I find it just unreasonable to suppose that it's emerged like a blank slate out of meditation experience. It's been mediated in some way by the language and the culture. And I think it would be, if we want to understand it, a starting point, at least a starting point, would be to discover how that is in fact mediated through culture and history and language. And I don't know anybody who's actually even seriously thought of doing that.